Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Every night for hell is what it is, what it do. Since Bobby Ingram, Curtis Ennis, know that we've been loyal even when we wasn't winning. A trusted source for the news.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of 79th and Hallis. It is your boy Flows, Flows and Adelini on Twitter, with my brother Barb Chair Scott on Twitter. This is episode 216, and we have two very, very esteemed guests. First is Jason Leisure, Chicago Bears beat writer on the Sun-Times, also co-host of the Sports Adjacent podcast. If you follow the Chicago Bears scene, then you know my man Jason asks those hard-hitting questions that Bears coaches may be annoyed with, but that you also want to know the answer to. We appreciate him having on. Then, of course, we got my man Herb Howard of the Bigs. What does Herb not do? Herb does everything. Radio, he does TV, he does it all. We appreciate both of you all being on here with us today to discuss the Bears. And well, the season was trash, but there's a lot of stuff that's going on. And
also, because I know you're finna miss the intro like you always do, don't forget to subscribe to the Patreon, patreon.com/barbershed network. We got all three different tiers. We got the $5 79th the Hallis tier. We got the $5 summer sessions tier. If you just want to hear the guys talk shit like we usually do, it's up right now. And if you want all of it, it's the $10 fee to get that. So take care of that. Follow the BC Net on Twitter and Instagram. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Barbershed Scott. And now we can go back to it.
I feel like every time I've been on here, you guys have squabbled over something like brothers do.
Oh, yeah. This is every day.
It's such, Herb, it's such a more like authentic and real squabbling than the little squabbles that me and Tony or me and Russ get into, because we're just friends. Like, you can't squabble with your friends the way you squabble with your siblings.
It's definitely different.
Definitely can't. Yeah, I just always remind him I was here before he was. I was here two whole years before he was.
Oh, like on the earth. Okay. I thought you meant on like the you earth. Started the podcast.
I have a joke where I call me, my all dad, right, and my mom with a big three before he came in and changed everything. So, but
anyway.
My kids do that too, though, actually. I have an 11-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old daughter. And every now and then, my 11-year-old daughter, she'll make sure that the 9-year-old can't hear it when she says it. But she'll be like, hey, I want to talk to you, mom and dad. You know, just original family.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to give them a reminder.
Hey, that is brilliant. Original family.
Brilliant and super mean.
Original.
That's right. As the younger of two brothers, I don't like it. But, you know.
jumping in to our rundown for the day, I just want to get really raw thoughts, original thoughts from you, Herb, and Jason, because me and Scott will go after you, about how Kevin Warren, former Big Ten president, is now the president and CEO of the Bears. What are you all's initial thoughts on the hire by the Bears?
Well, I'll start with this. I think that it makes a lot of sense in terms of where the Bears are right now. I think the easiest thing to jump to is the stadium. And, you know, Jason's great friend of mine, the two times that we've been up to Minnesota in the last 2 years when I've been on the beat, he's like, this is what the Bears should be doing. This is the blueprint for what they should be trying to build in terms of getting a new stadium. And he's absolutely right. It is aesthetically pleasing inside and out. It's got great sight lines from every part of the stadium. It's really, really loud. And they do some cool things in that stadium. And so Jason's been saying that that's the blueprint for as long as I've been covering the Bears. And so I think it makes sense from that standpoint, but also he's got the Midwest ties, obviously Minnesota, Big Ten. And so he's done this before. I think it makes a lot of sense, and we'll see, you know, what type of cohesiveness they're able to build between him, Poles, and Eberflus.
What do you think, Jason?
I can't really say I know what he's going to do. I mean, we don't know a lot about this guy. He's got a press conference coming up on Tuesday where he's going to be pressed on a lot of these things. The stadium's a huge part of it. I mean, you can't deny that they have this blank canvas of however many, is it 350 acres or something like that out in the suburbs, where they can build anything. And the two places where Kevin Warren's been, where they've had new stadiums, he was there when they were in the process of opening the stadium in Detroit. And then he was obviously in Minnesota when they were opening that. Neither of those has this kind of setup. Neither of those is just a blank acreage. Both of those stadiums are in downtown, and you have to work with the constraints of what you have as far as space. This is like, you know, your imagination can run wild. And I'm hoping that Kevin Warren is someone whose imagination runs wild, who thinks bigger than the mom and pop reputation that the Bears have. From a football standpoint, and as far as everything not related to the stadium, I mean, what do you hear from people in Chicago all the time about the Bears? All the time, what they say all the time, whether it's the 90s, the 2000s, the 10s, or today, they say, oh, please sell the team, get a new owner. That's never going to happen. This is the next closest thing to that happening, is bringing in an outside voice who's going to run everything. And what I would really like to see from them, from Kevin Warren, like even more so than the stadium, because if he does this thing, the stadium will kind of fall into place along those lines. I want to see him institute this culture of excellence that is not there, where everything at all times is done to the very best it can be done. And if you look
around sports, someone say press box food.
That would help. But you know, there are organizations in sports like that where you know, when people talk about the Patriots, the Steelers, the Miami Heat, the Spurs, the Dodgers. Are the Lakers thought of that way, I think, in L.A.?
No, actually, the Clippers are. The Lakers are like, their thought is like, anybody watch Succession, it's like if Shiv took over the company. That's what it is in the Lakers.
So the Ballmer Clippers are in this group.
Yeah, the Ballmer Clippers, yeah.
But there's this insistence on doing everything right, having every part of your organization run the best that it can. And the Bears have never had that reputation, ever. The Bears instead have been like a friendlier, more wholesome version of the Cleveland Browns, where they get it wrong pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
So Kevin Warren's biggest job is going to be making the Bears an excellent organization. And if they're an excellent organization, then they're going to have an excellent stadium.
Definitely.
Oh, man, that's a very, very good point. And I would be – I'd be lying if I said I knew a lot about Kevin Warren. Because my ties to the Big Ten are, I love the Buckeyes and I want them to dominate every team. That's literally the only thing I care about. When a Big Ten team loses or wins or gets a bowl, I don't care. In terms of even progressing the Big Ten, it's weird for me, because as much as I love college football, it's still hard for me to understand what these executives within these conferences do. So I can't say I know a lot about him. But what Jason hit at, that culture, it's unfortunate, but it's the truth. I do not think of excellence when I think of Chicago Bears. So you have 85, but that just seems like it's a little flukier here. It doesn't seem like it was something that was building or that led to excellence, excellence, because you have the 90s, you got the 2000s, 2010s, and now we're in the 2020s. There's no sense of consistency. There's no sense of that this is a finely run organization. Even if they weren't winning well or winning a lot, it doesn't seem like it's finely run. So, you know, when I even look back to Poles and Eberflus press conference during last year, and their talk about setting the culture, it made me think to myself, well, the culture goes just beyond the GM. It goes just beyond the coach. It also goes to the executives. It goes to the owners. And so as much as I'm happy to see someone new there, I'm going to say happy, hopeful to see someone new in this position, will Kevin be able to change what seems like just who the Bears are? You know, lovable losers, you know, so to speak, or friendlier version of the Browns, friendlier losers than the Browns. And I'm probably more pessimistic toward it now. I'm like, I guess that's a good hire, but I'm not 100% sure how I feel.
I'm going to give a comparison that Bears Twitter always gets mad at me when I compare it to, but it's spot on. The Chicago Bears are the football Knicks. They're the number one team in the biggest market. They have like what's the number one thing about the Knicks? I have a lot of friends in New York. It's the garden. Take away the garden, from the football, from the actual basketball team. It's two different things. And even look at all the top moments in the Garden. They're never from actual Knicks players. It's Michael Jordan's 55. Kobe Bryant's 56. LeBron's 59. You know,
Reggie Miller. Eight points in 6 seconds or whatever it was.
Steph Curry's first big moment is
they got the LJ. They got the LJ 4-point play.
Okay, you got the LJ 4-point play in the shortened season. You know, you got little small things where Melo pull up 61 in a loss. But, you know, it's them type
John Starks dunked on the entire Bulls team.
But their self-image is so overinflated.
Yeah, exactly. My point. So with the Bears, it's like, it's the same thing. It's Soldier Field. It's the 85 Bears. It's the Super Bowl shuffle. We're hearing about all these things that happened when Reagan was still in office. And so we need to be able to, they need to have their own identity. And I think, I'm not going to sit up here and act like I know what Kevin Warren is going to do. I know less about college sports than all three of y'all. I only know that I've known the most this year because the Bears have a hot pick, and I've been getting my Mel Kiper on. But for the most part, I don't know. I just know this dude is black, so I'm that's 50%. I'm good right there. That we got the actual thing that I actually got to give George a little love for. He said they were actually going to give minority candidates an actual look, and that's something he's actually been doing here with Kevin Warren and, of course, Ryan Poles. To me, this is something where if he can get the business side of it straight and get the Bears, the stadium that they feel like they can get. I know y'all talked about Minnesota. I haven't seen Minnesota, but SoFi Stadium is amazing. Now, I'm not expecting that for Chicago because it's a very LA thing. Like to say, SoFi is a day party with a football field.
That's a unique thing. You couldn't do that here.
You couldn't do that here. It's a day party with a football field. I went one time and I forgot there was a game. So I'm not expecting for that to be with Chicago, but the Bears are the charter franchise. They need to be in that same category. Like, prime example, look at the Cowboys. The Cowboys have this prestige, you know, this huge fan base, and they ain't won in 30-something years. But we just expect the Cowboys to be run a certain way. And the Bears are just like you said, Joe, they're the lovable losers. It's kind of like what the Cubs did. But when they won the World Series, now they're back to business now with having cheap ownership. But the time they had Theo, it was a change. You know, he had a president. He's going to change everything that needs to be changed from the previous organizations. We're going to actually draft players. We're going to spend money. That's the kind of thing that I'm expecting from Kevin Warren to kind of bring the Bears to actually the charter franchise actually mean something from a business perspective. And if they can do that, I think it'll be a home run hire.
Did you say that the Cubs are back to business as usual?
Yeah, they are. Back to business. Back to business as usual, not paying people.
I mean, all of the Chicago teams are back.
All of them are back to you. Like, that is very true.
White Sox are the best of them, and that's not saying much.
No. Look, we'll be on here for an hour and a half. I start ranting about the White Sox, but it's like, you know.
I know, I'm telling you, that's the best. That's the best they got.
Like, Dansby Swanson.
The bar is here.
The Blackhawks are like 8-25 or something like that. Like, the White Sox are actually doing the best.
And Dansby Swanson, nice, but he's the Carlos Boozer of the shortstop market. So it's the same thing. Like, what the Bulls did a couple years ago. So really what the Bears need to do.
Analogies, bro.
I know. I love it.
So it's really, I just think it's, you know, we don't know what he's going to do yet, but I think it's a good signing, but now it's time for him to actually get to work.
So that brings me to our next 2 points Scott has on our rundown was 2022 season, the greatest tank ever, which.
Now, can I say something before you get to that?
Yeah.
It's not the greatest tank of all time. The greatest tank of all time is when the San Antonio Spurs rested David Robinson to get Tim Duncan, and which led to 5 championships. So I should have put, is this the greatest football tank we've ever seen ever?
The phenomenal decision that they made.
Phenomenal decision. Because you think about it, it was put together to perfection. Like, even look at the players that Paul signed from the beginning of the season. We all watch a lot of football, a lot of football. I didn't know who Nicholas Morrow is, and no disrespect to him. I didn't know who he was. I didn't know who some of these guys were he signed. To me, this was put together intentionally to strip down. You have a season where they only won 3 games. Remember the breakout game from Justin Fields, which was in October, it was 2 days from my birthday. They didn't win nothing after that. It was 10 straight dubs, 10 straight losses, but the games were exciting. You know, they were in majority of the games. Justin was showing flashes. So I even said at the beginning of the season, if the Bears only win 3 games, Justin ain't the guy. Prove me wrong, because I'm on the complete opposite side of it now. So if you look at everything, the way they put it together, You got the experience you wanted from Justin. You lost the games. And then even to get the number one pick, I remember we was in the press conference a couple weeks ago. We were talking to you, Jason. We were trying to put together the scenario of how they could get the first pick because we didn't even think it was possible. So from getting that to all the cap room, I can't think of a situation where it was done better.
So I think they got lucky more so than they tanked. Like I'm not going to say they did anything intentional to not get it, but I don't think they did so much to actually go about getting it. Just watching the way, I mean, the last few games kind of got away, but 4, 5, 6 of those losses were games they could have very, very easily won, and they didn't do anything blatant or egregious to secure those losses. And so this could, I mean, a couple bounces one way or another, this team could have won 5 or 6 games or 7 games or whatever. So I won't say that they were tanking. I say that last week they just went ahead and waved the white flag. They just realized
that final game.
Yeah. That last game was like, okay, that's we're done here. All right. And that made sense. Yeah. But until that point, I won't say that.
I'm sitting there watching that game, just as an aside. I'm watching Nathan Peterman play quarterback for the Bears in a meaningless game that they're losing, and it's 3rd and 7. And he throws for 5 yards.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there thinking, how is this different than normal Bears? This, I feel like this is what I've watched my entire life. Is
very Bearsy.
Some Nathan Peterman like guy throwing for 5 yards on 3rd and 7. I mean, it could be
Craig Krenzel.
Jimmy Clausen or whoever. Right? It could be. Yeah, I feel like I've seen this.
Chad Hutchinson.
How do you tell the difference between tanking Bears and regular Bears?
Well, they used two different quarterbacks. It was tanktastic on Sunday. Like they used multiple quarterbacks. They were, you know, we gonna put Peterman in for the second. Then we gonna bring in old boy whose name I don't even remember.
That ball Tebow threw was.
It's Boyle. Ooh. I can never remember if it's Tim or Tom Boyle, but either way, like the first play, they sent Tim Tom Boyle in there, and he just chucks it downfield, like into tight coverage, and it almost gets picked. And I was like, whoever slapped this kid on the butt and said, let it fly, was on board with the plan.
Yeah.
And like two plays later, he threw just an egregious pick.
A punt to Patrick Peterson. Yeah. Patrick Peterson was down. He could have fair caught that. Like, he just
the easiest pick the Peterson got.
Imagine them saying, hey, we take no chances this week. We announce Fields is out on Wednesday with an injury he just played through. Played through like 2 days earlier. We rule him out Wednesday, say, oh, he's too hurt. He can barely walk. He's in a wheelchair. And then you get into the game with Nathan Peterman, and Nathan Peterman is like kind of okay, and you're like, Tim Tom, you're in there.
Tim Tom, let's go.
That's a great point nuts. Because I was watching both games. I was watching that and the Houston-Indianapolis game for the first time this season. I'm nervous. I'm looking at the score. I'm like, no, it's too close for the game. Let me turn back. Somebody take Peterman out.
Like, yeah, I said, that should be it. And that's why I know I couldn't be an executive or a coach, because in my mind, I would think, man, we need to tank. I'd be like, Cole, great job. We're sitting you for the game for your own safety. And then I'm going to put in my fourth string tight end.
I don't get what
it was. Bayless Jones, man.
Teams do that all the time. Yeah, I would have set him down too.
Yeah. Bayless was cooking. I mean, this is nice.
All the time, though. Teams do this all the time. I don't know why it's controversial that they were tanking this game with the number one pick on the line. Like, you better tank this game.
It's the best thing for them to do. If I was Eberflus, I would have challenged Bayless's touchdown.
Herb, he sort of did that, though, because they kicked. When have you ever seen this? They kicked an extra point at one point in that game, I think in the first half, made it. Yeah. And there was a penalty on Minnesota, and he took points off the board to accept the penalty and go for two, which they didn't get.
Yeah,
with Nathan Peterman or whoever was in at that point.
I think I looked at Herb, and Herb was like, "I'm going to challenge this play."
I would have dropped my red flag, like, "Hey, ref, I think he stepped out."
You got to do it with the Mavericks did last night. Jason Kidd challenged a foul just so Russell Westbrook could shoot it. He's like, no, they fouled him, but it wasn't Schroeder. Like, they had to do something like that. That's exactly what it meant. Like, that was a good play by Vilas, but sit down.
So
I told Velas that in the locker room after the game too. I said, bro, you didn't know what was going on out there? Like, you out there really playing. Like, what, you messing up the plan right here. What are you thinking?
You know, Velas had a good game because his Instagram was nothing but slides from that one game. That's how you know he got up.
So when you look at this season, how do you evaluate Justin? Because this isn't his rookie year, and I can't give him a rookie benefit or say, even this is his first year with a new system, and I get it. But how do you evaluate him fairly? Well, you're not super critical just to be critical, but you're also not baiting him like, unfortunately, fans did with Mitch.
It's very difficult. And I agree with Scott that I would say the most surprising, the single most surprising thing about this season to me is that they could have this bad of a record and Fields be pretty good.
Yeah.
I thought for sure if he's good, there's no way that they're going to only win three or four games. So for him to actually make progress and then still be this bad is kind of amazing. But I would say that all of your concerns that everybody had going into the season about, boy, Poles didn't, this is why this is not a perfect tank in my opinion. Like, Poles didn't give him anything on the line or at receiver. All of your fears about that all came true completely. Yeah. And he's out there with nobody. And he's out there all the time, dropping back, and the other team's getting four-man pressure instantly, right away. And all of his receivers are covered. And what's he supposed to do then? He's supposed to either run for 60 yards or take the sack. Like, that is a complete no-win situation. That is a totally different sport than what Dak Prescott is playing or Pat Mahomes is playing. Yeah. So it's hard to evaluate him. I think back to the Giants owner saying, I think it was last year, about Daniel Jones, that, hey, we've done everything we could possibly do to screw this kid up. And I think George McCaskey could say that too, because I don't even need to get into all the nonsense of the Matt Nagy rookie season where they treated this guy like he was some prospect from Southeastern Utah State who had never played big time football. Like, you need a red shirt year, son.
Yeah.
But this year wasn't good either. I mean, you took out the dysfunction of the coaching staff this year. I think that not only did Getsy and Eberflus have better ideas, but I think everything was much better run, much more cohesive across the board, across positions in the offense. But the talent was still just as bad, Herb. So, like, I have a hard time evaluating Justin Fields. I think he made modest progress as a passer. I think he was more efficient. You're still talking about a guy who was bottom of the league in passing yards. You're talking about a guy who in his last game that he played threw for 75 yards. And that's just gross. Like, that's not a bad game. That's a game you don't even hear of. Who has that game? No quarterback just throws for 75 yards in a game. So no matter what's around him, you wanted to see more in that regard. But I do think if I have to bet one way or the other, I'm going to bet on him to continue ascending, because he did ascend this year. It wasn't dramatic. It was moderate, but I think he was more efficient. And if you put better talent around him, you will get better production from him.
Yeah,
I agree. I think there were legitimate indications of the player that he can be. You saw him make the throws. You saw him make every throw that you need to make to be an elite level NFL quarterback. You didn't see it nearly enough. There was no consistency with it. And a lot of that is on him, but a lot of that is about the people that are around him. That is about the cumulative effect of having that instant pressure that Jason is talking about from just a four-man rush. 70% of the time you drive back. I mean, they got to 3rd and 6+. The outcome was very, very, very predictable. He was going to get sacked or he was going to run for a first down. Nothing else was going to happen. He wasn't going to find an open receiver over the middle. He wasn't going to be on time with the comeback. That wasn't going to happen. And so I think if he is surrounded by elite level talent on the outside and he gets some semblance of an NFL offensive line, I think you will see more consistency in terms of getting those throws on time, in rhythm, with accuracy that we saw him make the few times that he did have those types of pockets. And I know a lot of people like to point to the few times where he had those types of pockets and then he didn't execute. He didn't pull the trigger. He didn't see the guy running open down the field. But I think so many people just don't understand the cumulative effect of being back there in a pocket that is constantly inconsistent. He doesn't expect to be able to hit the top of his drop and then be able to hitch and throw. He doesn't expect that. He doesn't very often have that. And he also doesn't very often have receivers running wide open. And so when you show me a snapshot that says, hey, look, he had a clean pocket and Dante Pettis is wide open right there, you're right. And if you want to use those snapshots to make your argument, you can certainly do that. But I think to tell the full story, you would also need to look at the past 5, 6, 7, 8 dropbacks. What happened then? And then the cumulative effect of that. Now that he's got to get over that, right? I'm not absolving him. He's got to get over that and stop seeing ghosts and stop expecting the worst things to happen. But it's just a very, very natural thing where you aren't used to having receivers running wide open and you aren't used to having a secure pocket.
I'm worried when you say that, Herb. I'm wondering if you are concerned that he developed bad habits this yes. year that could linger because of the circumstances. Because think of the line that he would have played behind at Ohio State, for example. Like, he has not had to do this. He has not had to do this. And now he's been kind of mentally trained by the circumstances to have some of these bad habits. Do you think that's going to be a problem next year?
I think it's certainly going to take some time for him to say, hey, it's safe back here, right? I've come out of this abusive relationship and I've got a new partner who actually loves me and doesn't come home and smack me in the face. When that person comes in, I'll be like, hey, you aren't going to hit me? You're hugging me? Okay. And then eventually I hope you'll settle in and be able to accept that love. But I think there is going to be just a bit of a kind of learning to live with this new normal of not having 300-pound guys coming on the back all the time. And so I think there's going to be that process. You talk about Ohio State, he's got the best offensive line, he's got the best wide receivers. Olave and them dudes open as soon as the ball snapped. We ain't nothing to worry about. We ain't thinking about it. They better than every DB you got. So this was a totally, totally new experience for him. And I think he certainly picked up some bad habits. I think that he's going to be able to, you know, live with that new normal and go back to the player that he knows he can be. But absolutely, there's a cumulative effect that could last with him. But I'm hoping that he's able to work it out in the preseason, maybe the first couple of weeks, where he'll stop kind of dropping his eyes and getting out too soon.
Yeah, that's super true, because when I remember, because of course I love the Buckeyes, I watch every game. When Justin came from Georgia and we got him, I was super excited. But then I think back to his second to last game when he played Clemson in the semifinal, and he got that big hit. He taken out, got hit in the ribs. He was in pain.
That was vicious.
Then he comes back and he starts throwing touchdowns, because in his mind, he knows, I have an incredible line in front of me. I don't have to have the fear of a constant anxiety that this line is going to collapse, because it wasn't going to collapse. Because it's interesting, because I'm looking at the Pro Bowl list and I'm looking at the linemen who are in the playoffs. I see plenty of Big Ten, you know, Buckeyes sprinkled in there. The Buckeyes produce some solid linemen. In addition, when you're a big school in the Big Ten or even SEC, you're going to play some burgers. You're going to play some trash teams. If you were on NCAA 14 and you were with Bama, you'd be playing FCS Northwest or FCS Southeast. You're going to be playing trash. And that's the reality of college football. You play at least 5 trash teams. And you get used to, nobody's going to touch me. The only time I remember when they played a team that was below them, but they still got to them, is Khalil Mack with Buffalo. I was like, because I had never heard of Khalil Mack. I said, how in the world do we just get sacked? Like, how did this happen? That was one of the few times where I thought about that. But Justin had, and on top of that, I mean, Olave and Wilson, 1,000-yard receivers.
Wide receiver university.
My goodness. Marvin Harrison Jr. is here. We have
Ibuka. We don't say his name. 88 Jr.
88 Jr. is here. Yeah. You know, so it's just a school that just breeds skill players that would make any young QB feel comfortable. And it's the same worry I have for CJ Stroud, even though he hasn't made his decision. I'm assuming he's going to enter the draft.
I hope he knows the value of a degree and stays in school. So the value that
get up out of there, shorty. Up out of there, man.
I mean, if he wants to win a national title, this is his best chance, because Stetson, the 45-year-old, is gone. But moving on into
I ain't get my take yet. Hold on, brother.
I'm sorry, Scott. You talking about siblings? I wouldn't even
here we go.
Anyway,
here it goes.
The original
you guys,
son.
You guys don't even need me and Herb here for this. While you bicker.
I mean, for me, I mean, I think all three of y'all give good points. And Herb, you had a good point about the bad tendencies, bad habits he might have picked up. But I do think there was a point, and I think it was the third game this year we played Texas, when they played the Texans, where I legit thought this kid was broke. Like, I was like, I'm even telling you and Joe, I was like, I don't know. He might not be it. Like, I started having the irrational Bears fan fear. Dang, they messed it up again. But the way
he was terrible. He was awful terrible. His first four games. He was terrible.
It was terrible. And so, like, it was – but to see the growth from that, and I do think it's going to take a while. Let's hope that Poles does give him an offensive line and receivers. I do think maybe the first – couple games of preseason, maybe in training camp, even early in the season, it might take him a while. But I feel like the thing that I see from Justin, even from college, he don't let stuff bother him or something bring him down for too long. I think it's something that he'll be able to click on. And I do think this year you do have to grade him on a curve a little bit because, like you said, Jason, he was at the bottom of the league passing-wise. He only threw for 17 touchdowns, had 11 picks. But you also, like you said, we're looking at what he's throwing to. Me, this is like you're telling somebody to drive a car with no engine and and no wheels. It's like, just please move it somehow, move the car. It doesn't make any sense.
You got to make it run like Fred Flintstone, and that's kind of what he did.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what he did, actually.
That's what he did with that offense.
He's like,
if someone could Photoshop Justin as Fred Flintstone, that would be great.
I don't know if you've seen a meme on Twitter that has like the Ferrari in the projects. That's Justin. He's the Ferrari in the projects. And so I feel like next year there's a way, but I've seen enough from him this year where I'm like, he can be the guy. And this is also, if you look at Philly, last year, I know Eagles fans love him now. They was calling Jalen Hurts everything but a child of God last year. Like it was worse. I even remember the playoff game against the Bucks. I was like, I don't know. So I've seen more from Justin than I saw from Jalen Hurts, and even from early 2 years, Josh Allen. Josh Allen looked a completely different guy.
Josh Allen.
I didn't. Now he's probably my favorite quarterback after Pat. But so to me, I feel like I see a path for him to get better if the correct guys are surrounded. And next year is going to be the year where we're not going to be up here saying, oh, that's on the receiver. No, it's going to be on Justin if he messes up.
If it's properly constructed.
Got to go to number one and an O-line, though.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's a lot of work.
Got to stop trying to convince yourself that Darnell Mooney's the number one.
Stop trying to convince yourself
that Chase Claypool is the savior. If those two guys, and I don't care who's two and who's three, but if those two guys are your two and your three, and then you still got EQ and Velus, on the roster too, but if those two guys are your two and your three because you wouldn't got a legitimate number one. Now you have a legitimate wide receiver core for the National Football League. Not piecing these guys together. Not, oh, we got a bunch of guys. No. It's kind of like a quarterback. Like you always say, if you got two quarterbacks, you don't got one. Right? If you got all these cluster of wide receivers, you don't have a number one, and you need one. And some teams are able to do it with a tight end, and we can talk about what Cole Kmet could continue to ascend into. But you got to have that number one guy for a quarterback to go to, and I don't think he's currently on the roster.
I agree with you. I would agree with you. And you asked Ryan, you pressed Ryan Poles on that the other day.
Yeah.
And he gave you, I guess he kind of answered it both ways because he said, well, you could have a collection of guys. But if you could get a number one, that'd be good. I think he knows that you need, I always look back to last year's Super Bowl and I think about the receivers that those teams had. And you look at like Van Jefferson. I mean, Van Jefferson would have walked into Hallis Hall and been their best receiver the day he got there.
Yeah. And he was four out there?
He was three, four, whatever, behind Beckham.
Beckham and Cup.
Cooper and Woods.
And over in Cincinnati, they had Chase and Boyd and Higgins. Like, if you set up your receiver core where Darnell Mooney is your third best, then that's a contending receiver core right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we all threw the parade, Herb. Man, people in Chicago are so quick to celebrate something before it's really true. And I don't blame them for it.
That's what we do.
I don't think anybody should take that the wrong way because I get it. It's out of desperation. You want this to be true so badly. You want Justin Fields to be the franchise quarterback so badly that all it takes is a couple of big games in November and you're like, okay, he's the guy.
I'm sold. I'm like the girl who went out on a date one time, and he's like, "Oh, he paid." Like I'm sold. Like
you have an analogy for everything; it's amazing. But where I was applying this though is to Claypool. Like just the mere trading for Claypool, he didn't even do anything yet.
Right.
It was like clear the streets. It's time for the parade route. Let's do it. Confetti from the ceiling. And then 14 catches over the next seven games. Like, even at his best, he's not a number one receiver. You have to bring in someone over the top of him and Mooney. Like,
and Jason, you made a real good point to me about Chase Claypool. Just him coming over, period, or him leaving Pittsburgh. You talked earlier about what some of these model franchises look like and how they go, but you made a good point to me about the Steelers being the franchise that let him go and what that could imply about him.
Yeah, the Steelers and the Patriots screw up in the draft like everybody else, but they, when they realize that and they bail on a guy like N'Keal Harry or another ex-Bear, Artie Burns from the Steelers, they're not wrong. Like, they know. And Claypool is not in that category. Claypool was very productive his first 2 years there. But, like, we're sitting here right now shaking our heads that pick ended up being number 32 overall, a first-round pick. At the time, it wasn't.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Time it was like maybe the 40th pick or something like that. It was not some overwhelming trade offer that they got for Chase Claypool. It was basically just the pick that they spent on him. Yeah. And they were like, yeah, that's good enough. We'll take the refund here. Take Chase Claypool, a team that needed him, a team that was rebuilding itself with a young quarterback and could use
what
you imagine Chase Claypool could be. So anytime the Steelers or the Patriots bail on a guy, that's a big red flag to me.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And Claypool has not really done anything that has, like, put that to rest for me. And I don't understand Ryan Pohl sitting there saying, like, Claypool is going to want an extension. Does everybody understand that?
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to agree. You don't have to say he's right to want an extension, but he's going to want an extension now.
Don't you think that would kind of be, like, in your favor, like, maybe you get a contract year out of him next year? If he wants to get,
or you get him holding in next year,
disgruntled
because you didn't give him the money. Sure. I mean, like, and I'd be concerned about that with him.
That's true. It's so funny. Herb was talking about was that you or Scott who said that the two quarterbacks, you have two quarterbacks, you have none.
Yeah.
Shout out to Northwestern 2010-2014, Trevor Siemian. The two QB system they ran that thoroughly confused me. But you know,
he's in a two QB season next year with no, that wasn't him, it was Brock Osweiler. I was gonna make a Peyton Manning joke, but anyway,
it's so interesting when you know Jason talks about the hope that Bears fans have because I have that same hope too. And I think it first started when the Bears, this is a while ago, when the Bears got Brandon Marshall. Now that was a legitimate number one, number one receiver, and since then, I've sort of looked for a splash to happen every couple of years where I go, ooh, who is this person? Actually, no, it started with Jay Cutler. And Jay Cutler wasn't some premier quarterback. I think he threw 20.
But compared to what the Bears have had.
Which is a shame.
I know the bar is in hell, but.
Yeah. We signed Jay Cutler. I'm like,
Jay Cutler, I was excited.
He's
their best quarterback ever.
Yeah, ever.
No one in the 100 years of the Bears has been better than Jay Cutler.
It's only going to take Justin Fields one good season to change that.
Right. That's not any of the four of us saying that Jay Cutler was awesome. He wasn't great. He was just Bears great.
But that kind of brings up
wasn't
to
Moses Moreno
about like you know Justin may have pick up bad habits as fans. Still to this day, my heart stops when the Bears quarterback throws the ball because of Jay Cutler. Because we knew it might end up in the hand of an opposing defender. Jay had them backbreaking. No, Rex threw picks, but Jay threw them backbreaking picks. Because he would be throwing,
I know
like,
what he means.
He'd be throwing like Elway for an entire drive. He's like, all right, we got something. And then it's just the dumbest interception. We still have that paranoia.
You're right.
So looking back
out of nowhere.
You know, since we were talking about Justin's weapons and what he has if we look at the totality of Ryan Poles' draft class from 2022, and for people who don't know, that's Kyler Gordon, Jaquan Brisker, Bayless Jones, Braxton Jones, Dominique Robinson, Zachary Thomas, Tristan Ebner, Doug Kramer, Jatari Carter, Elijah Hicks, Trenton Gill. What do you give him? It's the end of the season, what do you give him as a retrospective grade for his draft?
I give him a B. Yeah. I like the a B plus. I like the Brisker and Gordon picks. I liked him at the time more than other people did. Everyone was upset that they didn't go all line or receiver. Mm. It was not going to be
I took a walk at the draft when it was not going to be a one year fix.
What was it?
Yeah.
I took when they drafted Kyler Gordon as Joe, I left the draft room. I had to take a walk.
But those were huge needs, though.
Yeah, but I was thinking about George Pickens for like the entire.
And they're probably still thinking about George Pickens because that's the criticism of that in hindsight. But I didn't have any problem with
it. So they wouldn't get the guy that George Pickens kicked out the door. Like, oh, we'll get that guy then.
Claypool, yeah.
With the same pick.
We'll get the other guy. Right.
I liked those picks. I liked those him addressing those needs at the time. Cornerback was, I mean, the position that Ryan Pace left them in 2021 at cornerback, it was criminal. It was unconscionable that he could have ever thought that was going to be a good plan to have Jalen Johnson and nobody. Jalen Johnson and the practice squad out there at corner was just, that was inexcusable that he did that. Velus Jones is like, I'm not really sure where he fits, even if he gets a little bit better. The big success story of that draft is Braxton Jones, because you find a guy late in the fifth round from Southern Utah who starts at left tackle for you. But I'm not sure how great of a success story that really is.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Is he the starting left tackle if your team is good? Is he the starting left tackle on the other 31 teams? Ooh. Just because he's the starting left tackle on your team, especially with this Bears team, 2022 Bears, that doesn't mean you're actually an NFL level starter. And
Tom
I would
Brady
imagine
him out right now if he's his left tackle.
I would imagine that they're looking to replace him next year with somebody better. Maybe Braxton Jones finds another spot on the line. Maybe he's a left guard or a right tackle or something like that. But I would think they are looking at it saying, we need better than this. It's a nice one-year story on a bad team that this guy late in the fifth round but became a starter, but we need better than that. So I like the two for second-round picks, and those are the most valuable. Those are the ones you've got to hit on. I don't know if they found anything else after that. Velus Jones has a lot of talent, but with the Claypool trade, I mean, if they do what we think they should do, Herb, and draft or trade for a number one receiver, even if Velus Jones is good, I don't know where he fits.
Mm. Yeah, you know, that's legit. I think he's fourth at best. They go get a number one. He's fourth and probably fifth at best because
that's not even a real position. That's not even a real position. I mean, that's basically your return man. And you're not looking for, and he may be a good return man if he cleans up some of the ball stuff, but like, you're not looking for a return man in the third round.
No, you're not. I mean, and because we're in Chicago and it worked out before, and Devin Hester was a second round pick and all he really ever was return man, but he was the greatest one to ever do it. Like it would take a lot for Velus to live up to something like that or make that pick worthwhile. I think he's probably going to be some guy who gets, you know, 16, 18 snaps a game with some special packages if they go ahead and get a legitimate number one receiver next year. And then you hope to keep the explosiveness in the return game. But I like what Ryan Poles did in the draft. And I go back to, you know, where he was at the time, the limited amount of picks that he had. I like the way he was able to deal in the draft and get back and accumulate so many picks. I really, really like Jaquan Brisker. I think that kid could develop into a perennial Pro Bowl player. I like the way Kyler Gordon continued to ascend throughout the season. Yeah. I think certainly Braxton Jones has a lot to work on, but I think that's to be expected coming from Southern Utah. He didn't face any NFL pass rush at all. And so, you know, it's not something that he was used to. I think that he has to get his body and he's got to get in better shape, get stronger, be able to deal with the bull rush and those types of things. But I think he's got some traits that could, if he works on his game, he could be a serviceable left tackle for you. And we saw that before. We've seen seventh round Charles Leno be a serviceable left tackle. And so I'm not as down on him just yet. I also love the Trent Gill pick. I don't think we should dismiss that. I think that kid had a really, really good season as a punter for a team that needed a good season from their punter. And I think the Bears always need a good season from their punter, right? For the majority of my life, they've always needed to have a good punter. And so I like
Trent Gill. Nobody appreciates punts like Chicago.
Nobody does. Nobody can go back through the course of their team's history and name all the punters like the Bears fans can. Like, we can just go right down the line from Pat O'Donnell and Brad Manning all the way to like Todd Sauerbrunn. Like, we can – the punter matters around here.
You can go further than that. My grandfather used to say three damn downs and a punt.
Three damn downs and a punt. Yeah. It's interesting. I was thinking about Trent Gill and – because really? Surprisingly, I had paid
attention. This was just your day. You were just sitting around thinking about Trent Gill.
Somebody made a highlight tape of Trent Gill's punts this year on YouTube. Well,
they had a lot of time. What the hell are they doing?
And I think
highlight like reel of his punts?
One of those Bears, you know, YouTube that like, you know, make like hype videos or something, and they will compare him to Pat O'Donnell. Probably. Okay.
All right.
And
let's not talk about 12-year-olds and Trent Gill. We let Coach Hightower do that, okay?
Trent Gill hype video.
I know.
Go ahead, Joe. Go ahead. We'll let you talk. Go ahead.
I wasn't sure that he had a great season for me because I thought, man, some of these punts are kind of short. And I said, man, I thought Pat O'Donnell's probably doing better. Wrong. Pat O'Donnell's doing worse. Looking at net punt and average yards, Trent Gill is still towards the bottom of the list. Now, Pat O'Donnell is even lower than the bottom of the list, which just brings me to my worry with every Bears regime is talent evaluation. Are they going to get maximum value for their, you know, return? Kyler Gordon, Jaquan Brisker, I like both players. Jaquan Brisker, like you said, Herb, I really have high interest and high hopes for him being a really good player.
Yeah, me too.
Braxton Jones, I think that's one of the most hilarious things you said, Jason, was he's a great success story, but is he really a success story? Because that's the only way I can describe him. It's like, yeah, he did something.
Braxton Jones is a fake decent success story.
Fake decent. No, that's best way, Chicago way to say it, fake decent.
Yeah. Bears good.
He's Bears good.
You know, yeah. he's the winner of the Charles Leno Award. He's just he's the new Charles Leno.
Joe, that is the big concern is the talent evaluation. And we don't have any – we have very, very minimal track record to look at with Ryan Poles for that because this is his first – he's not even had a full calendar year on the job, and he has never held this job before. So you have no previous work experience to go look through and see what moves he made. And on top of all of that, the moves he's made since he's been here are almost entirely the moves that anyone would have made. That Ryan Pace would have made probably if they'd have given him the job security to know that he could survive it. The moves that he has made that have been out of the ordinary would be that you could really evaluate are probably what he did with the second round picks. And not that that's out of the ordinary, but that's where he had some decisions to make that were not obvious. Trading Roquan Smith away and trading for Chase Claypool. Those two trades, like, you know, I don't know if either of those is a great trade for the Bears.
Now that Roquan has signed, I want him to come out and say what the final offer was from the Bears. I want to know.
He might.
Like, now he's got 5 for 100. I want to know how far they were away from that.
He might. But Herb, I bet you caught this. Like, did you see the difference? And this is the first time we've seen this from Ryan Poles because we don't talk to him that often. And there aren't many guys that are his guys. But did you see the way he reacted to the critical questions on Claypool? Who is his guy? It's a lot different than the way he reacted to critical questions about like Jalen Johnson or Justin Fields. He had no problem telling you the issues with Justin Fields. With Chase Claypool, it was full,
very defensive and optimistic
mode.
And he sounded like he wanted to marry Darnell Mooney. Like, he was like, I loved him more when I came in though. Like,
yeah, but I mean, at least there's reason for that type of love and optimism for Moon. There's no reason for him to be standing in front of bullets for Chase other than I sent the second round pick away
it's
for
him.
So he's like, it's on him. Hey, he's going to be fine. He's good. I promise you. Just wait.
He must be a nice guy because Justin did the same thing the week before. Like, and Justin was like, well, no, this is my guy.
They know he's going to be there. They know they need him. But it's like that clouds your vision as a talent evaluator because one of the things the Bears needed after going 6-11, after going all in to go 6-11, mortgaging their future to go 6-11, what they needed was someone to come in and say, this team is 6-11. Like, I don't want to keep any of this. Like, this needs to go, this needs to go, this needs to go, this needs to go. That's part of what you got with Ryan Poles, was a new guy coming in with no attachment to the 6-11 roster. And when you look at a team that's 3-14, you shouldn't have much attachment to that either. But yeah, someone that he brought in, like Chase Claypool, I wonder if he's going to be able to evaluate that clearly as he weighs the decision of whether or not to give him, you know, $18 million a year or whatever he's going to want in an extension.
You know, it's funny because I do the same. This is like nowhere near comparable, but in principle it is. I do the same thing when I buy a video game for the full $70. Somebody asked me, say, hey, Joe, how was the new Batman game? I was like, it was all right. It was all right. You know, some stuff in there. I was like, it was good. You know what I'm saying? It was, you know, the gameplay was solid. You know, it could have been better with story-wise.
But you spent so much on it that you need it to be good.
Exactly. Then I think about
the games. So you can sleep at night.
Madden 21 that I borrowed from a friend a couple years ago. And I was like, nah, this sucks. This trash.
Ryan Poles,
Madden 23, no investment.
Madden 23 I bought myself. No, that's not that bad. It's okay.
Ryan Poles was like me when Magna Carta Holy Grail came out. And I was like, this is a good album. It's a good album from Jay. Jay good album. And then like a year too late, I'm like,
Jay's worst one.
A good song. Yeah, like Tom Ford's not a good song. But as far as like with the draft, and you know, you said yourself, Jason, like just the mess that he inherited, you know. I've been saying since, by the way, I just want to say, Bears fan, I was right. You can tell me I was right about Ryan Pace. Joe, when did I say it? When was the first time I said it? It was probably 3 months to his first year.
Yeah.
There should be a spot in Guantanamo Bay for Ryan Pace for all the crimes that he has committed against Bears fans for the last couple of years. So this is a whole mess that Ryan Pace had to fix up. Yes. That bad.
That statement is only made by Scott.
Only.
Right.
Yeah. I'll be critical of Ryan Pace, but not to that extent.
You should hear my John Paxson thoughts, but that is not.
It sounds like I shouldn't. It sounds like sounds like that's more of a thing to go on Patreon.
Yes. Yeah. 100%.
Or off air.
100%.
What if he drafted the best Bears quarterback ever? Will you change it then?
No, this is why. This is like when somebody wants credit for taking care of their kids. You messed up the first time. You should have got Patrick Mahomes, you know what I'm saying, or the QB who not should be named in Cleveland. Like, you should have got one of them. And, you know, I'm not going to give you credit for messing up the mess that you made. But Poles, I feel like with his actual draft, like, I will give it a B2. I really think Jaquan Brisker has an opportunity to be really, really good. Kyler Gordon started off very shaky. Like, with those games, we pointed out he's messing up, but he finished the season strong. And I like what I saw from him. And really, just the fact that I feel he nailed the first two picks, which is something very important, something that Ryan Pace didn't do well. His best work was later on after the fact. Like, his best work was not the early rounds. So that's something that I feel like looks good. But we're really not going to know what kind of, you know, poker player this dude is to about 6 weeks from now. This is his season. This is an important season. I know I had it on a rundown later, but we're just going to pull it up because I'm talking about it right now. This season right here, this offseason for Ryan Poles, he messed this up. He might not get another job. Like, because you have everything that you need right here. You've got the draft capital. You've got the money. You've got the promising quarterback. If you mess this up, on top of the fact you're black, so you're really not going to get another opportunity if you mess this up. He's got a lot of pressure. And so I just really want to see how he's going to do it, and then we can give him the proper grade. Because right now it's like, okay, like you said, Jason, he's doing stuff that a lot of us would have did. And I feel like, you know, him being defensive of Claypool, I hope it's a thing where in his head, because I'm hard-headed like that. Like, in my head, I might know I'm tripping, but if I'm called out on it, I'm going to double down. Just because I'm hard-headed.
Like, so, Scott, we missed our exit. No, we didn't. Scott, we missed our exit. No, we didn't. Scott, we missed our exit. Turn around. No.
And then I'll be like, man, you're right. After we get to the spot, I'll admit you was right. So hopefully he just
3 hours doing later.
That to the media. Exactly. Right. Hopefully he's just doing that to the media. But in his rooms, he's like, you know what? We might have messed that up. So hopefully that's what it is.
I think you're absolutely right, though, that this is a huge offseason. And he tried to downplay it on Tuesday. I thought it was interesting, too, that he said in his opening statement he was thanking the fans for being so supportive and that he had people coming up to him all the time in restaurants or at the Jules or whatever and telling him, like, hey, you know, we know what's going on. We're good with it. We like organization's headed. And then he was asked later in the press conference something about, well, don't you, now you're aware that the fans are going to have very high expectations now.
I asked him that. Yeah.
Was it you? And yeah. And he said, oh, that's, you know, that's outside noise.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. All right, buddy.
It's going to be inside noise.
Well, they have it both ways.
There will be inside noise, though, too, because I think this is where Kevin Warren comes into play. Like, he just took this job. And now this is Brian Poles will answer to him now and not George McCaskey. And Kevin Warren, if you're just taking this job, you're not going to tolerate like a bunch of more losing. If this is like 5 wins next year and 6 wins the year after that, I don't think he wants that in his first 2 years as president. So the new boss coming in even puts more pressure on Poles that this is the time. Whatever he wants to say about how, well, you make a mistake saying, oh, this is the time. No, pal, no. This is the time.
If you do 5 or 6 wins next season, he's gonna be updating the Zillow. Like it's really that simple. Like
he better know it. Like it's fine to say, you know, I put pressure on myself and we want to do well. That's fine. I believe you want to do well, but you better understand the pressure that's around you for this. Like this is you had you know a mulligan for whatever was gonna happen last offseason. Nobody was expecting anything. You were right. The pressure was low. The pressure's high now, sir. Like, you have to hit a home run this offseason. It was fine to hit your singles and maybe try to scratch across a double last offseason. This offseason has to be a home run. Anything else is a failure. Like, he needs to know that. So don't come into May like, oh, well, you know, we didn't want to be foolish and we didn't want to jump into this. And, oh, we got to – No. This whatever you do with this number one pick, trade it back, stay put, whatever you do with it, it better work, and it better work quickly.
And I wonder if they know that.
I don't think he knows how Chicago sports get down yet when it comes to teams. Like, prime example, ask Zach LaVine if he's feeling the heat after getting that contract.
Yeah.
Ask him every time he get the damn ball, and I'll be like, pass it to Mar. So it's like, he doesn't, and I'm not the one calling the radio station. So it went in the Bears of the team of the city. If the Bears win 8 games, we throw in a parade. So I don't think he really knows the heat that will come if he fumbles this.
He and Eberflus have talked for this first year as though they're going to be in charge for 10 years.
Yeah.
And Poles' moves have kind of looked like that too. And they've been very conservative. Like, oh, I got time to build this. And he had one year, sir. I don't know if he's bluffing. I don't know if it's just like, you know, kind of talking points or whatever when he's trying to lower expectations for this offseason. But whatever it is, like you don't just have forever, man. Yeah. I mean, in Chicago's not like that. And the Bears in particular are not like that. They rifle through coaches and GMs. You are not going to have just unlimited time to build this. And they are so aware at the top of Halas Hall. I guess I shouldn't say Kevin Warren because I don't know him, but like they're so aware at the top of Halas Hall what the perception is and what the media coverage is. There will be no doubt that George McCaskey is fully aware of what opportunity Ryan Poles has in front of him this offseason.
Yep.
No doubt about it. What did y'all think about him in the press conference talking about Ryan Poles when, you know, asked about Justin Fields and specifically about the prospect of drafting a quarterback, you know, at number one, how definitive he was in saying like, no, that's not a possibility. And I'm fine with Justin Fields. I'm not talking about really actually replacing him, but just strategically, Scott, you were talking about his poker face, you know, this offseason, and we're going to find out about in the next 6 weeks. I think the best thing in terms of a poker perspective would have been like, we might take one. Like,
but I think he actually did.
I want to drive with the price for that number one pick as high as I can. So
I think he did a perfect job.
You better
job
believe I might take the kid from Alabama. I might take the kid from Ohio State.
But I think he did a perfect job of that by also like putting some confidence in Justin and also with saying I'd have to be blown away. Basically, to me, that was kind of pay me. You know what I'm saying? Give me more if you want this pick. Like I feel like he didn't.
No, he was saying I would have to be blown away by the quarterback for me to take him.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So
I would have been like, no, I like both of those kids. I think they're really, really good. I like them both. We're going to continue to evaluate them. Everything's on the table. We damn sure might take one. Now you can walk out of that press conference and go tell Justin, like, hey, I just told him we might take them kids. We not, you good, but we running up the price on this thing.
Herb, I think he did. I didn't hear it the way that you heard it. I didn't think it was at all closing the door on anything. And I was really wondering about that from Sunday, from the end of that Texans game when they got the number one pick to Tuesday morning. I was wondering, how is he going to finesse his answer on this question about a quarterback to where he is like as supportive as he needs to be on Fields, but making sure the rest of the league knows he's open for business on this pick. I knows that like you better come get the pick because maybe I'll take a quarterback and you know, then what are you going to do? And I thought that's what he did. I think if he was to later trade Justin Fields and draft Bryce Young or whoever with that number one pick, I don't think there's anything you go back to on Tuesday and say, well, that was a lie. I think he totally left the door open. Now I think that it would be totally the wrong move to do that. I think it would be the fastest way that Ryan Poles could get himself fired would be to trade Justin Fields somewhere and he's great next season. Yeah. And I don't think that they will do that. But you're right in the sense of the more everyone thinks he might do it, the better for him and the better compensation he's going to get in the trade market. But I do not think at all he closed the door on that in that press conference.
Okay.
I think he totally left it open.
I think he I wouldn't say he left the door open for. He cracked the door. Yeah, you know, maybe.
He said I'd have to be blown away. Like, whoever in the history of the NFL has drafted a quarterback number one overall that didn't blow him away? I mean,
that's true.
And just wait till like the day after Alabama's pro day when, you know, Ian Rappaport or somebody reports like Ryan Poles, quote unquote, blown away by Bryce Young.
So It's coming. Yeah. Look, as soon as they hand the Lombardi Trophy to whoever wins in a couple weeks, it's going to be all eyes on the Bears. When we're going to be, it's tomorrow, 48 hours later, it's going to be something like that. Ryan Poles spotted it at Alabama Pro Day. He was looking at Bryce Young.
And he better be at Alabama Pro Day. I'll be mad if he's not. Yeah. He better be there. I'll probably be there.
You still need to evaluate regardless.
Yeah.
I think only in his position why I have more confidence in Justin Fields is because I like Bryce Young. Of course, if people know me, who follow me, I love the Buckeyes. I always thought CJ Stroud was suspect. I remember his first four games, and I was like, what are you doing here? Yeah. Like, please leave this program. And then, of course, we see him in his last game versus Georgia, and I'm like, I've never seen this from you. This looks ridiculous. But with Bryce Young, I've seen him be a good quarterback his entire time at Bama. My only issue is that it's not like Joe Burrow, his year at LSU. I was like, he's going to be good. And that's the most confidence I've had in a quarterback. If there was a Joe Burrow in the draft, I would probably seriously consider drafting a quarterback. Bryce Young, I mean, when they stood him next to Kyler Murray, he looked shorter. And so, my concern is it will always be size because Russell Wilson was smaller, but Russell Wilson's pretty much at 6 feet. If not,
and he was a third round pick.
Yeah, and he was third round pick. You know, and so he's a bigger dude. You know, and so I think right now I don't expect him to, but I think the desperation for teams is that with Bryce Young being that guy they want to get, you want to try to leapfrog the Texans.
It doesn't have to be Bryce Young though. It could be Will Levis. This is the great thing about picking first is you only need it to be one.
Yep.
If you were picking second or third, then you need everybody to fall in love with these three quarterbacks. Yep. But when you're picking first, all you got to do right now is wait. Just wait like a month or so, maybe more. When you get through the Senior Bowl and the Combine and the Pro Days and whatever, and see which of these quarterbacks is all the momentum is behind that everybody wants. Yeah, and it only has to be one. But, like, you want a bidding war, and you could kind of artificially put yourself in the bidding war by saying, we might take this guy. Like, Scott, you're in L.A., and imagine if somehow the Chargers had the first pick, like through a trade or whatever, they were picking first this year. Imagine that question being asked to Tom Telesco about like, is Justin Herbert your guy? Or are you like thinking about a quarterback here? Number one, that would have been a definitive answer. Yeah. That would have been an absolutely get out of here. I can't believe you're even asking that. There's no way in the world we have our quarterback. And that is not the answer you got from Ryan Poles.
It took LA till day before the draft that they knew they had the first draft pick because the Chargers are light. And Portland's number six out here. They done found out, like, oh, damn, they got the pick. Let's talk about the Lakers, man. They lost again last night. But I kind of feel like, you know, I don't think there's any shot that they trade Justin Fields, but I do feel that you're right. They do got to play it up. If every GM or whatever knows that you're 100% not gonna draft there, then they're gonna try to lowball you. So I do feel like he needs to get that the price up. I think he did a solid job of that. I think he did enough to say, yeah, Justin's our guy, but at the same time, I'm not 100% ruling that out. And even his yeah, I don't know if his yeah was that confident yeah. Like, yes. It wasn't like a for sure.
Yes. It was kind of so like, important. It's so important yeah. to point that out, like the nuance of and the way he was asked it. The question was like, do you plan on him being your quarter? Well, of course he plans on that.
Yeah.
Who's it going to be? Tim Tom Boyle? Like, look who's on the roster right now. Right now, as of today, that's the plan. But the plans change when the circumstances change. Yeah. But I don't think they will do it. And yeah, I don't think it would be a good move to do.
Yeah.
But I do think they're going to go all out, and until they trade that pick, they're going to go all out trying to make people worried that they should, and I think will, bring those guys in for workouts.
Official visits.
They yep. should absolutely do that and make sure everyone knows it.
Yeah, be at every steakhouse with all three of those dudes. Like, you know what I mean?
I tweeted that the other day. I was like, if y'all think we having fun now, just wait till stuff like that happens. It's finna be – if you're annoyed by ESPN or any coverage right now, you ain't seen nothing. You ain't seen nothing. Wait till the NBA trade deadline is over. We ain't got nothing to talk about. That's when it's going to hit. So that's when it's going to hit.
And we spent a lot of time talking about the roster and how it was being constructed by Poles and what it looked like. So and Jason also brought up how it's tough to grade Justin. Is it also tough to then grade Matt Eberflus with what he was given? Or is it a little bit easier, especially since they came in at the same time?
It's funny that you asked that because I was just asked this week, I think it's going to be in the Sunday paper, to give Matt Eberflus a grade. And I just went with C, like just average. I don't think he did any better or any worse than any league average coach would have done with what he got. What do you think, Herb?
Yeah, I would probably go a little bit higher. I mean, not much. I might go C+. I can't give him a B with a 3-win team, even though the cupboard was so very bare. But I like that C. You know what I mean? I may give him a C+. I like the culture that they seem to have established. I love the way they play the game. I love their toughness. They fought for four quarters. Eventually, they were just outmanned and they couldn't get it done. But I like the feel of that locker room, even though they were in the midst of a 10-game losing streak. You never walked in there and saw guys like not laughing and having fun with each other, throwing each other on the bus. They always were talking about, you know, having each other's back.
10-game streak, you got to just start laughing. It's like in high school when we played Mount Carmel, we got blown out. We played spades on the bus. No one cared. We were terrible. It's time to laugh. The only thing we can do is take pride that, oh, well, we lost. We played Mount Carmel, then we played Sterling in Sterling, Illinois, and they smoked us by 50. We played spades. And our coaches were like, why y'all so happy? We're like, we got smoked. There's nothing for us to do here. We're going to enjoy
it. There's nothing for us to do here.
I feel you, but even to that point, they you know, like I said earlier, some of the late games got away, but they were pretty competitive, you know, throughout the majority of that season, even against some playoff teams. And so I'll give him credit for that and doing that with this bare cupboard. But, yeah, I mean, you win three games, you're lucky not to get an F. And so a C is quite complimentary. So, yeah, I may give him just a little bit more because I kind of – you know, appreciate how empty that cupboard was and setting that culture, but that sounds about right.
Yeah, I give him a C.
For sure. Yeah, I give him a C too. I mean, he showed up to class. You know, he wasn't late. You know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't take a lot of sick days off. You know, he did.
Hey, Scott, you the funniest dude alive, bro.
don't make the mistake, though, of giving Matt Eberflus or any other coach bonus points for just not being a clown. That's don't true. Be like, oh, well, great job not being a clown. I mean, not being a clown is part of the job.
That's true.
So, like, just the fact, I mean, and he didn't in any way sound like Jim Boylan anytime he was talking.
Or Matt Nagy.
But that can't be, like,
that
shouldn't even be discussed. Bare minimum expectation is come in and talk like a grown-up.
Yeah. I've got BTSD. I've got bear traumatic stress. Like it's bad. And so I'm grading him as though, like, well, he's not this guy, and he's not that guy. He's not Mark Trestman. So, like,
yeah, because then you're grading him on a scale according to the Bears' loserness. Yes.
Right. In which case, then he's Bears good, but not
Bears good. Bears good. Right. That's very true. So our
he's
last...
got a C and a Bears plus. Plus. He's got the Bears C on the side of the helmet. Like he's got that.
our last point, our last question are intertwined, and it's needs for the team and expectations. So, of course, you know, Jason talked about how in the offseason last year, that corner position was ridiculous. It was Jalen Johnson and no one. They bring in Kyler Gordon. I think Kyler Gordon and Jalen Johnson are pretty solid. I like Brisker. Eddie Jackson healthy. I like him. So with the secondary taken care of, and I'm even saying air quotes with that, or caution with that, what are their most pressing needs? I mean, it's everything, but what should they hit first, then second? Because you could go receivers, you could go line. I'm inching towards line. And then after that, what are your expectations for them to do?
I mean, they have three huge needs. Receiver, O-line, D-line. And they're all huge, huge needs. And so I guess the way I would go about ranking them would just be about how you feel like you can fill those holes. And so how do you evaluate the free agent class of defensive linemen? How do you evaluate that versus the free agent class of wide receivers and offensive linemen? And so whatever holes you feel like you can fill in the free agency class, then you go ahead and you fill them that way, and then that should adjust your draft plan. And you know, depending on where you think you can fill these holes at, that will be what happens first. I'm not really ranking any of them above the other. I think they are three huge, huge needs. If you forced me to pick, I would probably go D-line just because that defensive line was atrocious. I mean, the offensive line can say, hey, we had the number one rushing attack. We know that was Justin Fields, but that's fine, right? The offensive line could say that, right? You can get this whole thing about Darnell Mooney and Cole Kmet and Chase Claypool going again. So, but that defensive line, there's nothing, there's no way to excuse what you saw there. That thing has to be overhauled. I don't care if they want to bring any of those guys back. I'm sure Justin Jones would be back, but like, you don't have to bring none of those dudes back. They got to get some difference makers on that defensive line. So if you force me to pick, I would start with D-line, but all three of them are extremely, extremely necessary. And which one you get first just really depends on how you think you can go about filling it.
Yeah, I think, I'm with you, Herb. I think that all three are definitely major issues. I still got to put offensive line number one because I think it's about protecting your quarterback, you know, more than anything. And I think, as I know everybody, since we're all Bears fans and everybody's like, we need offense. Yeah, we do need offense. We do need a number one wide receiver. But I think you got to build this team through the trenches. You got to get better on the offensive line. You got to get better on the defensive line. And then I will worry about getting wide receiver. Now, having said that, they have so many holes. I don't care which out of the three they draft first. As long as you get you a really good player in any of those three positions, we'll be good. They'll be good to go. So I just feel like, you know, they need to have a spark, man. Like they need to do something to the first pick, whoever they take, needs to be a home run. It has to be the guy. Whether you go
10-time Pro Bowl dude,
like 10-time Pro Bowl dude, you know, like you need.
I don't want an infield single. I want a 3-1.
No White Sox baseball. I want Los Angeles Dodger offense when it comes to who you take at your first pick. I don't want singles and doubles. I want out the park. So whether if you get a Jalen Carter, whether you get a Will Anderson Jr., you need this guy to be established as the leader of your defense, or if you get an offensive lineman. So you need to find the guy. And there's even one thing in the Ryan Pace regime, he swung and missed outside of Roquan. Roquan was the only guy he got in the first round that was actually worth something long-term. And I know Leonard Floyd had a better career later on, but compared to where he was drafted.
That's a single. That's not a single.
He's not Leonard Floyd is not a guy. You know, the guy in Los Angeles is Aaron.
He's not
Thomas.
The guy. He's a guy. He's a guy.
He's not the guy. Or as Charles Barkley like to say, he's not driving the bus. He's the bus rider. He's not driving the bus. So they need somebody who can drive the bus, and he needs to hit on majority of these picks. But I really think free agency is going to set the tone, because that's the first thing. And I feel like he needs to figure out what holes he's going to take care of in there, because there's a certain floor that the Bears have to spend. So I'm expecting the Bears to spend a lot of money. If we're talking about expectations, I expect them to have spend a lot of money. They might even overpay in some situations. I personally don't care about that. Even look at Jacksonville. We all know that they overpaid for Christian Kirk. Christian Kirk had a pretty solid season. He made good plays, especially in that game last week to get them in the playoffs here. So I feel like he just needs to have a plan. He's got to hit because there's a lot of holes on this team.
Yeah.
You always overpay in free agency. Free agency in football is not nearly as profitable as it is in the other sports. It's not usually the way that you're going to build a winner, but you can get good free agents. Like somebody you were talking about, like wanting an exciting pick with that first draft pick, Scott, wherever that ends up being, fourth, eighth, whatever. Somebody asked me the other day something about if I thought the Bears were going to sign any really exciting or splashy free agents. I mean, if you consider a left tackle splashy and exciting,
they
go and get Orlando Brown or something like that. I mean, I think that'd be great. That's not a thrill position. That's not a place where you're going to be like, oh, I can't wait to go watch Orlando Brown play, but it's going to make everything else better.
Well, they could have like some splashy trades. Like maybe DeAndre Hopkins or Mike Evans or T Higgins to me is somebody who more lines up with the Bears schedule. Cause I feel like D Hop and Mike Evans, they're in their 30s. And I feel like if you win now, I would go get them. But for long term, I feel like that was something I do. So that would probably be like a splashy trade.
Yeah, I think a good offensive lineman is one you don't hear about.
Yeah.
Well, but
T. Higgins into a number one.
Yeah, I don't either. I like Hopkins.
I love.
You say he's 30. You say he's 30, but I mean, I bet he's got two good seasons left. And
oh, for sure. I'm just talking about where the Bears' window is.
Right, but this goes back to
their window is to 25 before they pay Justin. After they pay Justin,
okay, that's a true point.
You got to rebuild again anyway.
That's true. You got to
if Justin becomes that, I'm saying,
because then he's gonna be getting $40 million a year. So you're right.
What are you saying, Jason?
Yeah, well, my point is like that. I mean, when do you plan on being good again? Because if it's not going to be in the next 2 years when DeAndre Hopkins would still be good, then I don't know if that can't possibly be the timetable, that it's just going to take us forever to be good. And so DeAndre Hopkins is too old. I mean, with two good seasons left. And it's a great point that you guys brought up about receivers. Like there are no great wide receivers in the free agent class. And Ryan Poles has even said that. But that's not really where you get great receivers necessarily. Like Tyreek Hill was not a free agent. Devontae Adams was not a free agent. AJ Brown, no one even knew he was available until draft day. So you need to be very proactive and very aggressive about finding whoever that is. And well, maybe it is Devontae Adams. Like Devontae Adams might be one of those guys where, even though he just signed his contract, maybe he's available. I don't know. If I was building a team, like my way of doing it would always be like, these are the most important things. It's always about quarterback and stopping quarterbacks. So I would go like, I need number one, I need a quarterback. Number two, I need a pass rusher. Number three, I need a left tackle to protect the quarterback. And number four, I need a cornerback that's going to be a problem for other quarterbacks. It's just going to take entire parts of their playbook away, that can take Devontae Adams away or negate him somewhat. I would, in my opinion, I'd stick with where they're at quarterback. I would leave that as problem solved. And so I would say the next thing would either be pass rush, which, like, there's nothing wrong with taking Will Anderson at number one if you think he's Miles Garrett. Yeah. If everybody comes to that conclusion that he's that type of talent, that's not a bad outcome to just keep that pick and make sure you get him so that no one else does. I still think in their case you could get back to three or four and still get the guy you want and get some extra assets. But I guess I'd go offensive line too. I'd go a little out of order on my own chart here. I'd jump offensive line in front of defensive end, just because their offensive line is so bad and you can't put Justin Fields through another season of that. And Justin Fields has shown you that he can be good, that he has something, and you need to do whatever it takes to bring that out of him in full.
Yeah.
And the offensive line would be the way to do that. Draft or sign or whatever, you know, a great left tackle and move Braxton Jones over to right tackle or whatever you got to do.
Yeah. No, I agree wholeheartedly. So, we are wrapping up this episode of 7th and Hollis. We want to thank Jason and Herb for coming on and rocking with us. This was a great episode. I'm never going to forget Tim Tom Boyle's name. This is going to stick in my head.
That is great.
Forever. I still don't know what it is.
I don't either. Not even
now. I'm more confused.
And I didn't even care to look it up. This was episode 216, right, Scott? 7th and Hollis. Thank you all for listening, and we will catch you all later.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.